So please help me welcome Bessie L. from Easley.
Hello, Bessie. Love you, Bessie.
Thank you, thank you. Do you know this is the first time I have ever seen myself on Zoom, and it's going to be the last time because you don't know how bad you look till you see yourself. And let me get my black eye out of the way. Maybe God's helping me with my ego. But anyway, I have a disease of the eyes called blepharospasms, and I have had it since 2002. Figured it up is 19 years. I've been going to the same doctor. Well, I went Thursday, and it keeps my eyes open. I have something in my brain that controls the muscles around my eyes. So I get Botox every 3 months around my eyes. I never have a black eye on this left eye, but he always hits a place. Not always. He didn't last time, but he hit a little bitty place. And I thought, well, I can cover that up with some makeup. Well, I got up the next morning and it was like this. So my husband did not do this and he never has done it. So, but that's how I got my black eye. So I'll get that out of the way. But you know, I was worrying about how I was going to look and everything. So God took care of that, didn't he? I'm originally from Monroe, Georgia, and I can really identify with all these accents because I still have it. I'm 85 years old, and on October the 13th, 1971, I came into Al-Anon. So, and my husband came in on October the 3rd, and so in October, we'll have 50 years. And I have been an active member for 50 years. And I cannot believe that I'm that old and that I'm stayed in the program that long. But, you know, I've always been the type of person that if I like something, I'm going to give it 100%. And my first meeting, my husband went to treatment. And back in the 70s, 71, there wasn't many treatment centers around. Well, I think maybe the Willing Way was in Statesboro, but we couldn't afford anything. So there was a treatment center in Greenwood, South Carolina, called Faith Home. And it was started by two AA persons, and it didn't cost anything. And so he was the 13th person to go, and he's been the first one to stay sober in all these years. And we're still supporting Faith Home because it saved both of our lives. Well, the lady there told me to go to Al-Anon. She gave me a name of a lady, and I called her. And this was on a Saturday, and she picked me up on Wednesday. And I've been there ever since. And it was called the Central Group in Greenville. Well, now let me get back to my God stories. I've had two this week, and that's letting me know that everything's going to be all right. I've always had a higher power. I was raised in the Methodist church and still going. And also I went during my husband's drinking. I guess I just had needed God and went to church. I drug my kids to church, but sometimes they didn't want to go. But anyway, and sometimes I was in a blackout and didn't hear a thing the preacher said, obsessing about him. But I was there. I was there in body, so I must have got something. But my God story is I was talking to one of my sponsees. I think it was Tuesday. Butterflies are my signs from God. And so my husband has developed cancer, and we just heard this, found this out in the last month or two. And so I've been having some anxiety over that. And so I'm not one to take pills. And I told my friend, I said, I think I'm going to take me an anxiety pill. And I had some that the doctor gave me a long time ago. But anyway, after I finished talking to her, I came by the kitchen door and on my storm door was a butterfly. And I said, thank you, God. And I didn't take a pill. Well, anyway, you'll find out that I like to laugh, and I like to laugh about myself. But anyway, this morning, I went out to get the paper, and it was 7:05. I'm a paper reader. I've been taking the paper forever, and I love the paper. And I went out and got to get the paper, and in front of my house is trees. And I looked up, and there in the landing there was a deer. And I said, thank you, God. Then I knew everything was going to be all right today. Well, now let me get started. I was born and raised in Monroe, Georgia. And me and my husband were high school sweethearts. And let me get me a drink. Sometimes I get dry. And we dated all through high school, and he was 2 years older than me. So his class was the first one to go to the 12th grade. So I loved going to school. I loved it. And I was popular, and I was a cheerleader, and I just really enjoyed it. Had a lot of friends. I met him when I was in the 8th grade. He was Methodist, and we would our churches would meet once a month for district MYFs. And that's where I met him, at his little church out in the country, and at the MYF meeting. And so anyway, when I got in the 9th grade, he was in the 11th. And so we started dating, going together, I think, steady. My daddy would say steady was when I was in the 10th grade. And my daddy drank, but he wasn't an alcoholic, I don't think. My husband said he was a heavy drinker. But he would drink he worked hard. My mother and dad both worked in the mill, and they worked hard. And we had, daddy worked two jobs usually. What he did was run the canteen in the mill, so he had different hours. And so on his off hours, he would work at a service station. But anyway, I can't think of a thing that I did not want that I didn't get. You know, back then when I was growing up, everybody was about the same, because it was during the war, and people just didn't have a lot. But I was always a happy child, so I had one brother, and my daddy's aunt came to live with us when I was 3, and my brother was born, where my mother could go back to work, and she was like a grandmother, and she lived with us all my life. And so I didn't have to do a lot. I mean, she did it all. And she was real particular, and I'd do something, and then she'd come in behind me and do it over. So I thought, well, there's no sense in both of us doing it. But anyway, I really had a good childhood, although my daddy drank, but he wasn't abusive or anything. And if my mother had kept her mouth shut, it wouldn't have been a big deal, but she didn't. She fussed. Well, I made a decision to tell, when I grew up, I was not going to marry anybody that drank, and I wasn't going to fuss. Well, me and Jerry started going together, and he came from an alcoholic home, too. His daddy was worse than my daddy, and he lived out in the country, so he didn't have as good as we did. But anyway, we got married when I got out of high school, and then we had two children when was in Georgia, and my daughter was the first grandchild on both sides, and Jerry's two grandparents was living at this time, and so she had four sets of grandparents, and so she had it made. Well, we lived in Georgia till 1960, and I knew Jerry, he wouldn't drink around me, but he drank when he left me, and I didn't know how much he was drinking. And after we got married, then I found out how much he was drinking. But I thought, you know, I'm going to make him the best wife, which I did, and he'll change. Well, you know, better than that, they don't change. I didn't know nothing about the disease of alcoholism. I was raised in a state when, raised when you kept everything to yourself. I remember my mother said, don't let the neighbors know about your daddy. Well, everybody knew about my daddy. I mean, he would sit on in the summertime, he'd sit on the front porch in his underwear when they was changing shifts. And Mama didn't want nobody to know about it. Well, anyway, in 1960, we moved to Greenville, South Carolina. Jerry's uncle that had a business over here, and Jerry was the oldest nephew, and he wanted to come over here and go to work for him. So I was so excited about moving. I thought, if I get him away from his single friends, then he won't drink. Well, we moved to Greenville, and he went to work for his uncle, and he's still there. Well, his uncle's died, but we still got the business. And I went to work, and, you know, when I look back, God has taken care of us all the time. I went back. I went to work. We bought a house, so I had to go to work. I was just working part-time in Georgia, and my mother kept the kids, so I went to work full-time, but his aunt worked at Bell's downtown, and so she got me a job in payroll, and I loved it. And my neighbor across the street, she said, Vicki, my daughter, she was about ready to go to the first grade, and my son, she said, I'll keep him. And so there was, she was keeping the kids, and there was my job. And so I went to work. Well, I worked there about 2 years, and I got a job at the bank. Well, by this time, Jerry had found some friends to drink with. He didn't like to drink by himself. So he found some friends to drink with. So anyway, his drinking began, and he would he liked to go to bars and things like that. And, you know, you heard me say earlier that I didn't fuss. Well, I couldn't fuss. He wasn't there. He was gone every night. And so, you know, I was two different people. At work, I could be happy, and you wouldn't know I had a problem in the world. And then when it was time to go home, that old knot would come in, and I'd go home. And I was a good wife. I mean, I fixed dinner and made sure the kids got the homework. And I was a good mother. But, you know, when I look back, I didn't give my kids very emotional love. I did give them love, but see, I was raised where you don't say I love you and all that. So I really didn't know how to do that. But I did take care of them. And I went to all their school functions and things like that. So Jerry's alcoholism progressed, and he had a bunch of enablers, me and his family and his uncle that he worked for. And so he just drank and worked. And we didn't have a lot of money because he spent most of his. And I was so dumb, y'all. I was so naive. I was just the dumbest thing you've ever seen. I think about now, if I had been honest and maybe told his uncle and aunt what's happening, then I'm sure they would have supported me, and maybe he got sober quicker. I don't know. But anyway, if I had known about Al-Anon, I would certainly join, because I joined everything after the kids got to be teenagers and they were taking care of themselves. I bowled and I went to a diet club, but it was more of a social club, because after we weighed in, on Thursday night, we'd all go out to eat together. So that was like a social club. But I stayed in that. We had fun, and we'd go on conventions. And I did have some fun when doing this alcoholism. But anyway, I think it crossed the line in about 1965 from social drinking to alcoholic drinking. And then that's when the problem started. The car wrecks, the hospitals, he started having convulsions, and it was bad. So the way we got into the program, he went to Faith Home in Greenwood, and the lady told me to go to Al-Anon, and I never heard of Al-Anon, didn't know what it was going, but I was going to support him when he got out. You know, I didn't even think one thing about leaving him. I thought, I don't have the courage to do that. Well, anyway, I called this lady, and her name was Betsy, and she'd been in several years, and so she came and got me. We lived close by, and we went to Al-Anon. And there were six people there, and there were two groups in town, and so I continued to go to Al-Anon. But you know, we took a lot of inventories, especially our spouses. But you know, I had never told anybody that I had an alcoholic husband. Even the lady that kept my kids, I know she probably knew something was wrong, but I never verbalized it. I didn't tell nobody. And so we started going to Al-Anon. Well, when he stayed 6 weeks, but that was the grandest 6 weeks I have ever had. I mean, I didn't have to worry about him, and oh, it was wonderful. And I could go just one time a week to see him, and I mean, it was just great. I was so relaxed and not having to worry about it. But do you know, the kids didn't even know their daddy. I mean, they just knew him as Tyson, you know. But I continued to go to Al-Anon. And my second meeting, they were fixing the vote on closing the meeting. I said, you can't close. I just got here. And so the Betsy, the girl that brought me, she said, well, if you come with me every week, we'll keep this together. And I said, suits me. See, we didn't have no long timers. We knew nothing about the program. We had very few pieces of literature. The One Day at a Time hadn't come out. And I mean, you know, we just did the best we could. Now, I think our delegate from South Carolina lived in Spartanburg, and he would come over occasionally, but he didn't tell us about service or anything like that. He'd just come to a meeting. And so the way I got into service, I mean, I got in service at my second meeting because we had to take our literature. We met in a building next to the church, and the AAs met in the church, but we had to take our literature back and forth and put it in the closet in the church. So I started carrying the shopping bag with what literature we had in it. And so anyway, I continued to come every Wednesday night. And then I started going to open AA meetings. My meeting met on Wednesday night and open AA meetings on Friday night. Well, I got to know the people. See, back then it was just husband and wives, and I got to know the husbands of these Al-Anons, and I loved the AA speaker meetings, and I learned a lot about the disease of addiction. And so a lot of people like for me to tell this story, but I had Jerry a place all picked out for him. I had picked him out a sponsor, and I mean, he was ready to go into the program. Now, see, I didn't think I had any character defects because I didn't drink and I didn't smoke and I didn't run with the men. So, and I tried to be the good girl and worked and went to church, and I was Miss Goody Two Shoes, and I didn't curse. And so anyway, we continued to go to meetings. And we went to conventions. My first convention, we came in October, and our first convention was in March, and it was in Greenville, and it was at the Poinsett Hotel, and that was when I first heard my Al-Anon speak. And so then, my husband, about a couple of years after that, my husband got to be the GRGSM, I think is what they call it, for his AA group. So then we started going to Columbia to the meetings. Well, everybody stayed at the same hotel. And then that's how I found out about Al-Anon. And so I went and I loved it. I just loved it. And then we continued to go. And then we heard about a fellowship by the sea at Myrtle Beach. And that's our first out of town convention. And a whole group of us went, and we did that for years and years and years. And I met some of the nicest people there, and still friends today, that the ones we met there. A lot of them passed away out of our group that we ran with. There's three of us. Four of us left out of that group. So anyway, that's what happens when you get old. But then I got active in service. And in South Carolina, we did not have any, we wasn't in any districts. So in 1975, our delegate went to New York, and she was a go-getter, and she came back, and she divided us in districts, and was the upper, middle, and lower district. Well, I wasn't even at the assembly. You know, I had a lot of enthusiasm for the program, and I would do anything you asked me to do. And like Ginger said, if I found out if you're willing, God fits you to the job, and he did, and I had the enthusiasm, and so I wasn't even at the assembly, and they appointed me as the DR of the upper state. Well, I read in the handbook and learned what a DR did, and so I started having district meetings, I think it was about 3 years. My husband, he was working a good program. I mean, he, just like he was drinking, he put it all into AA. And he was growing. And I was happy on the fellowship, to tell you the truth. I was not growing like he was. And so one day he came to me and he said, "I love you, but I can't live with you anymore." I said, "You can't?" I said, "What have I done?" He said, "Well, you're not working a program." And we always had a problem with money because we never had enough of it. And he says, "You lied to me about the money because I was in charge of the money." And he told me all my character defects, and they were true. And so all this anger that I had pushed down all those years from my dad, I didn't tell anybody, from my dad and from growing up with anger and resentments and all these character defects that I didn't know I had. I didn't even know what a character defect was. And he said, "I'll take care of you." And I knew, and by this time, the kids was, one was in college and the other was, had an apartment when he got out of high school. And so there I was by myself. So this is when I had my spiritual experience. I was coming home from work one day and I thought, I think I'll just commit suicide. And earlier, I had tried it one time before when I was doing the bad drinking, and God saved my life then. But I still had some pills left, and I thought, I'll just take these pills, and nobody will be here, because he had his a place to live, and I was living in the house. And so I said, well, that's what I'll do. Well, that night, that when I was getting ready to go to bed, I asked God, I said, God, please help me. And I read in, we'd already got the ODAP book at that time, and I read July the 1st, and it said, you are responsible for your own happiness. You are nobody's guide, master, and keeper. And see, all our married life, I had been his guide, master, and keeper, and did everything. You're talking about controlling. I mean, I was queen of control, but I didn't know I was. And I didn't have nobody to tell me I was. So I just had an about face, and I started, I thought, well, I have a home, I have a car, I have a job, and there's no reason why I can't do this on my own. My kids wasn't giving me any problems that I knew of, but they were just taking care of themselves, and I'm glad I didn't know what they was doing. But sometimes I forget to tell you about our children, but our daughter got into the Al-Anon program, and I think she's been in about 38 years and still in there. When her daddy got sober, she hated his guts. And it took 9 years of Jerry being sober before she'd ever talked to him. And now our son worked with him. He went to work. He worked during high school, and he went to work at the shop after high school. So I'm sure he made his amends then. But he's a fine young man. Both of my children are good children, and we've got a granddaughter and a grandson, and one on the way, and it's going to be a little girl. But I am so grateful for my family, and when we have a dinner or everything, everybody shows up, and we don't fuss or anything like that, and I'm just so grateful. And it was God doing for me, for them, because with a crazy mom and a drunk daddy, I don't know how they survived. But we all survived by the grace of God. That's what it was. But anyway, our delegate was Ruby D. From the lower part of the state. And so she visited every state in South Carolina, and we divided up in the districts. Mm. And this was the next year after her, she was 75, 76, and 77. And so we started our first convention. We had that in 1977. The South Carolina started growing. I mean, really growing. So when I got elected delegate I served 78, 79, 80, man, all I had to do was follow her, because she had South Carolina on the map. And I traveled and in the state, and at the conference, I just have to pinch myself. I was in the conference for Lois W, and the first secretary, Harry Henaretta, and the lady that the first forum editor, and Alice Butler, that wrote the first ODAD. And I mean, I could not believe little old me that been in the program 7 years, didn't know nothing from nothing, didn't have no long timers in my group to teach me anything. Here I was in New York City. Well, at that time it was in New York, at the Biltmore Hotel downtown, and see, God sends people for me everywhere I go, and they gave the first time I'd ever flown, And I thought they'd be the mafia on every corner. And I was in that taxi, and they told you how much the taxi would charge. I want you to know it just fell into place. And I saw a limousine. I thought, well, that's the mafia right on the corner. And it was like country going to town. And so when I got to New York and I got my suitcase out and I was standing in line to register, mm-hmm. this pretty redheaded girl and her husband from New Jersey was beside me. And I had on my little Al-Anon pin that said, I love Al-Anon. And she said, is this your first conference? And I said, yes. And so she said, it's mine too. And she was the Alateen in town representative. But anyway, she took me under her wing. And every time we'd have a free time, we were going to places in New York. So I worked hard, but I played hard. And also, you know, we didn't have no computers back then, and we had to write everything. But in my first lady from my first roommate was from Canada, and this was her third year, and her name was Jessie and Bessie in the same room. And so at night that first year, she would help me understand what happened that day. And then I met Loretta Parr from St. Louis, Missouri, and we fell in love with each other. And so me and her roomed together the next 2 years. So she had been in maybe a few years before me, and we just got along great. And she helped me with the notes at night. And so anyway, I just had a wonderful time at conference. If I'm here to tell you, if you want to see some good Al-Anon and works, you go to conference, because it was just outstanding. And here I was, just young in the program, so no wonder I kept staying, because it was so wonderful for me. Okay, I'm almost time for me to quit. Mary can have some time, but you know, 50 years, you can talk for a long time. But I do want to tell you a funny story about me when my husband was drinking. See, I thought I was perfect, so I didn't have no character defects. In fact, I got two stories to tell you. Little old me now, Miss Goody Two Shoes. One night, I was awake, you know how you stay awake. I heard a car in the driveway. I peeked out the window, and it was a highway patrol. This was back in the 60s. Well, I worked at the bank at that time. And so I heard Jerry come up on the porch and knocked on the door, and I went to the door, and I said, what's the matter? He said, well, I hit a telephone pole in the police were chasing me in the city, and I hit a telephone pole in the county, and I need for you to come and drive my car home. Well, he had told this patrolman that the person driving that car had jumped out and run. And the police, when the patrolman got there, they left. Okay, now here, Miss Goody Two Shoes, I wore a beehive hairdo. Now, some people won't remember this, but the old people will. And I had it wrapped up in toilet paper, and on the top of it I had a pair of silk panties. Now, cause you did go to the beauty shop but once a week, so it had to stay all week. And if it got to itching, you just got the end of the comb and scratched your head. Well, I know some of you are laughing because you remember this. Well, I think I did take the panties off, but I just put my bathrobe on my around me with my gown on. I got in the back of that patrol car, and it was a customer at my bank. He came in every Friday, and I waited on. Well, I was never so embarrassed in my life, but I know I could not look him in the face when he'd come in. And And I know he recognized me. Well, I drove the car home, and it was full of beer cans and liquor bottles. And I don't even think my husband got a DUI because they believed him. But that was just one instant. Well, let me tell you another cute story, and I'll be ending pretty soon. I knew he had a girlfriend. Well, she wasn't getting no bargain because he was drinking all the time. In fact, I was praying for her. Well, one night, Miss Goody Two-Shoes were going to church to help with the kids at night, and I saw him. Now, he drove a company car, and I saw him at a service station pumping gas. And I was going up a main road. Man, I turned that car around, and I got in behind him, and he saw me and scared him to death, and he left his credit card and jumped in the car, and she took off. There was she was driving, and there was a couple in the back, and she took off, and I got in behind her, and she stopped at a stop sign, and I hit her in the back, and I was going to hit her again, and he when we could talk about this, he said we had one of them was a company car, and he said, we had two cars, and I was fixing to tear up both of them. And he jumped in my car and got the keys out. I wished I'd had the door locked, and he couldn't have got in. But I can just hear her, poor Jerry, no wonder he drank sleeping with that crazy woman. And see, I wasn't like that all the time. I mean, all these character defects can busted out. But I mean, that's just two of the stories that I want to tell you. But my time has got 5 minutes. But let me tell you what's happening now. In 2009, my husband had melanoma cancer, fourth stage when they found it. And the doctor sent him home. He took chemo, started neuropathy, and they sent him home to die. Well, we had hospice April, May, and June. And when the doctor said, when we left, he said, there's nothing else we can do. But he said, I'm going to give you an appointment in July, but you probably won't keep it. Well, here we go home. And he got in that back room, and we all prayed. I had him on every prayer list, all my friends and every prayer list. And my friend that I had a cousin that was a monk. So his name was Ronnie, and Ronnie put him on the monk's list, and it went all over the world for prayer. Well, and our grandson is an anesthesiology in Clearwater, Florida. And so he called, when he was in med school, he called his papa. Oh, they were like bosom pals. When Blake was born, Jerry said, I might have not been a good daddy, but I'm going to be the best granddaddy in the world. And he was. And Blake never saw me smoke or drink. So anyway, Blake said that a man gave a lecture, and he wrote a book, and he said had cancer, and said he kept praying, and he said that his story went that he saw a shark eating up the cancer in his body, and he just thought about that all the time. Well, Jerry said he couldn't identify with the shark, but he's a Georgia boy, and he could really identify with catfish, and so he just stayed back there and dreamed about the catfish eating up his cancer. Well, about the middle of June, y'all, he got better. Started eating, and in July, the first week in July, he walked into the doctor's office, and he left in a wheelchair. The doctor liked to fainted, and he called him his poster boy. And they did a PET scan, and all the lymph nodes was healed except one under one arm, and they took those out, and that was 2009, and he's still been going cancer-free. Now, isn't that a blessing? I tell you how power does take care of us. Now, right now, he had a cancer to come up on his arm, and we didn't know what it was. A dermatologist found it, and it was T-cell lymphoma. And it affected the nerves, and his arm started hurting, and his hands started hurting. So the radiation doctor, he had radiation for it, said he'd never seen that. And they did a PET scan, and it's in his body now. So we just praying that it's going to get better. And I know it will. With the God of our understanding and with the program of Al-Anon and AA and everybody praying for us. Thank you so much for asking me to speak. And you know, it always amazes me that some 85 years old and they still want to hear what I got to say. So thank you. And I want to thank the committee too, and Alicia that calling all the time, and I want to thank Ginger for taking care of me. Thank you. Goodbye.